that this live thing works. Okay, we should be live. Let me just double check on my end before we get started. Everything looks good.
Check my pulse, make sure I'm alive.
Yeah, no kidding. Yep, we are good to go. All right, so we're good to go. Hey, AdLeakers. So today I'm pretty excited about this. For anyone that gets on the weekly calls regularly, this has been a topic that was requested by quite a few people. And it pertains to the FTC. We're looking at doing a 10-part series on the FTC and how it plays into advertising and marketing. Two things I want to say is the one thing is a lot of people think, well, this doesn't apply to me. I'm not in the supplement space, or this doesn't, it applies to, and Marty, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not the expert, but this applies to anything, any niche, any type of, you know, way that you're saying certain things, which is what we're going to deep dive into. Marty, if you want to maybe tell before we dive in, we have a presentation prepared. It would really be great to hear your expertise in the space. I know you've worked directly with the FTC, just so people know, like, when it comes to compliance, there is nobody better than this gentleman here. So, Marty, if you want to kind of, and if you guys have questions, go ahead and feel free to, jump them in. I will say that bear with us. This one probably might be a little bit boring because this is kind of an introduction into the FTC and kind of getting to know it. But as we unfold this over 10 weeks, I think number one, what I would like to do is if you're interested and you have a brand, as we get into this, I would like to see in putting some brands into the hot seat where Marty can go on and just start tearing apart their sites, showing where they're not compliant. That would be interesting to kind of show as we go through this 10-week course. So Marty, I will kick it over to you, kind of let you give your background and expertise in this, and I
Sure.
will shut up because I am nowhere near an expert like you.
Sure. So first, let me answer the question that you raised earlier. FTC is one of three federal agencies that monitor scamming consumers in some way or another. There's the FDA, which everybody's heard of, which is primarily focused on health-related products and foods and medical. Then there's the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, which, as you said correctly, covers everything. If a marketer or a brand is promoting, advertising, selling, speaking to any consumer on any niche, any product for any category, the FTC has full regulatory authority. We'll get into what they do specifically. And then there's another one called the NAD, which almost nobody's ever heard of,
I never heard of it.
which is a very good thing because in order of being aggressive, the FDA is the least aggressive. And anybody who's in the supplement or health space knows how aggressive FDA can be. The FTC is 100 times more aggressive and 100 times more dangerous to advertisers and marketers. And then the worst of the worst of the worst is something called NAD. We'll get into that in a later session.
So
So
here, one quick question, like for example, one person that comes to mind that might say, like, well, he's in Canada, but let's say he was in the US. Alex Steele, his wife owns a bridal shop, local business, bridal shop. Let's say he was in the USA in this example. How would the FTC, like, I can think of a couple ways, but to hear from you, how would the FTC for somebody like that, that, you know, they might think, well, that doesn't relate to me. You know, I just own a small little bridal shop in a small little town. We do local business stuff and we do a little bit of Google ads here and there. How would that correlate to him having to be compliant with a business of that kind of type?
sure. So you're in the US, Justin, right?
Yep.
Can you go on Google and bring up Alex Steele's bridal shop?
Probably, I don't know the name of it though, but yes.
Okay. If the commerce or the promotion or the marketing or what is being said is being said available to US citizens, then it is subject to.
Right. So let's say he's in the USA, right? Let's say he lives in the US and his company is in the US. What kind of specific rules would apply to a small business like that? So that way anybody that's coming onto this live right away is like, wow, this shit doesn't apply to me. You know, I own a bridal shop, or I own a small auto body repair shop. I do some ads. I don't have to worry about the FTC. I'm not selling anything online. How does it apply to them?
Okay, so there's two things I'm going to say about that. Number one, it doesn't matter how big or small you are, how long you've been in business. If you, as a business or as a professional in any capacity, are marketing, advertising, selling to consumers, clients, customers, B2B, D2C, it doesn't matter. You are subject to all of the same exact regulations. Now, that being said, there are some additional regulations on top of the general consumer protection regulations. So, for example, if you're in the financial space, there are additional regulations. If you're in the healthcare space, there are additional regulations. If you are potentially marketing something to minors, children, there are additional regulations. There's a core set of regulations that everybody, regardless of size, I don't care whether you're Alex Steel Bridal Shop or you're Procter and Gamble, you're still subject to the same set of regulations. Now, what you bring up is a very interesting point, and that is the FTC doesn't have the resources to monitor every business of every size in every category in the whole world that's marketing in the US. They just don't have it.
Right.
So it used to be that they would dive in if there were A, enough consumer complaints to potentially cause a problem, B, if the marketer was so large that the amount of money involved was very substantial, they would get involved and keep a closer eye. So the FDA is watching Apple, and the FTC is watching Facebook, much more than they're watching, Justin Brenner, marketer. Now, if you get complaints against you, depending on the nature and the level of the complaint, then FTC may or may not decide to take a look. But what's happened over the last several years with the massive explosion of social media is that both the FDA on the healthcare side and FTC on all other consumer sides have embedded actual monitors and enforcement agents with the social media networks who monitor automatically, electronically with bots. They scan and they look for certain keywords, which could trigger an indication that the marketer is doing something unscrupulous. Let's go back to my a little bit of my history so people understand where I'm coming from. A lot of people in this group and other groups know me from my e-com and SEO capabilities and strategy. But it's all tied together. My history comes from the big New York, Madison Avenue, giant ad agencies like the show Mad Men. And my primary responsibility was to create strategy for the A-tier clients of these agencies. We're talking about multiple billion-dollar agencies. And the majority of clients at that time were either consumer packaged goods or healthcare. And because it takes so long for these companies to research, develop, prototype, test market, get a new product into the marketplace, and in healthcare specifically, go through clinical trials and FDA approvals, that you have to start a year or two in advance. You know another product's coming out in a year or two or three. You have to start right now. planning your advertising, planning your marketing. Because patent expiration is really only a short period of time. Trademark expiration is only a short period of time. So what happens is, in the case of, pick on a big pharmaceutical company, Pfizer. Pfizer launches a new drug. From the time they start developing it, they've already submitted and approved their patents and trademarks and all of that. So they've got 18 years of protection. Let's say it takes 5 years to get the drug approved and into the market. Now they only have 13 years left before somebody else can create a generic. So what happens is every day matters, could be millions of dollars a day. So when you're planning advertising and you're planning marketing for a multi-billion dollar brand, the last thing you want to do is go to market after you've spent years developing something and have your ads taken down on the first day because they're not compliant with FTC regulations. So during those years, I studied, I was trained by FDA and FTC on compliance so that I could be part of the strategic planning teams to make sure that what was about to be said was not going to get anybody in trouble.
Right. Okay. And then I know you put together a presentation, so we'll kind of, if you want to share your screen and we'll pull that out and go through the presentation we put together.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
I know the one thing that stands out to me, and I know we've talked about this in detail while you're pulling that up. One thing, you know, that most people, a lot of people are using UGC, right? Or, you know, like Join Brands, for example, we're using that with when you send people product to review. Now you have certain things that you have to put in your video to let them know that they are getting product for free. You can't just have them review it and not have any disclaimers. There's a whole bunch of disclaimers that go into that that have to be, you know, and we'll get into that further, but that's the one thing where I, you know, that comes to mind where I see a lot of people are not compliant.
I think there's going to be a lot of very interesting revelations here. Probably some of the more sophisticated advertisers and marketers and agency owners may know some of these things, but I guarantee you they're not going to know all of them.
No, absolutely not. Nope.
And the truth be told, before I jump into the presentation, there are many, many, many more things that marketers and advertisers, agencies should be doing that they're not. But I will digress for 1 minute and give a quick anecdote. This coming weekend, Friday and Saturday night. Hey, Friday night, party, Saturday night, go out, party, right? How many people this weekend do you think are going to drive after a few drinks or drunk?
A
A
lot.
lot. Are they all going to get caught? No. Are they all going to get arrested? No. Are they all going to cause an accident and kill somebody? No. So what happens is marketers and advertisers try to push the envelope, get away with as much as they can get away with for as long as they can get away with it. And I understand that. It's business, trying to make money, trying to get sales, trying to have competitive advantage. But at a certain point, the law of large numbers kicks in. If you drive drunk every single day, eventually you're going to get into an accident and you're going to hurt somebody or kill somebody. And so what happens with marketing and advertising is the larger you scale, the more people you reach, the higher you get on the radar of the regulatory agencies. The more customers you have, the more likely some of them may have a problem or a complaint. And your competitors really don't want you to succeed. And it's very easy. It takes 5 minutes to go and report anonymously a competitor for a complaint that could be serious, and boom, you're dead. Anybody that's marketing on Amazon, for example, this is a big problem on Amazon. You're marketing a product on Amazon, you're Prime, you're in the brand program, transparency program, you're doing all the right things.
Yep.
And somebody leaves a review. And the review says, I took this product and I got really, really sick. It's unsafe, whatever. Anything that has to do with safety, Amazon's jumping right in, and I know at least a dozen clients who've had their products delisted from Amazon because of one complaint from a consumer about safety. Now, that consumer, how do we know they're not working for the competitor?
Correct. We just had that with a scenting brand for oils, and that they actually so, and I learned this through working through Amazon reps, and we're still trying to get through, but they took a bunch of our listings down, which makes no sense because all the listings are pretty much exact same, just a different scent flavor, like through essential oils.
Right.
And they're saying that we're claiming to be like, can't remember, it was something around like cure disease or an ingestible, like, and it's not. There's a word somewhere. Just one word, and they won't tell us the word. And we've pretty much now at this point have deleted everything on the page. And they re-enlisted some of them, and the other ones are like, nope, they're still not good. And it's actually not even the Amazon, it's not even, it's a third-party company, like you said, Marty, that handles it, that told us, like, hey, you're in violation of an FTC or whatever. You need to fix this before you can come back in. But it's not even somebody on the Amazon team. It's a completely separate company that is completely blackballed from being able to chat to the Amazon team. All they can do is work through email, and they're not even part of the Amazon, internal team. It's an external hired team that monitors that,
And a
actually.
lot of the people who are going to be watching this series and in the AdLeaks various groups use Facebook and Google as a very prime source of where they're placing their advertising. And those two marketplaces are so highly regulated, they're watched constantly by the regulatory agencies. So, it's your business, it's your money. You can make a decision as to how compliant or how far you want to push the envelope in your comfort level. It's a business decision. It's a risk reward equation, right? I tend to try to err on the side of transparency and playing it straight because my clients are too valuable. They're making so much money that they can't afford to have to go into a fight. And we're going to talk about what the cost of non-compliance with FTC can look like. And trust me, you don't want to go there. So let's jump in. Justin said at the beginning, this may be a little boring because we're going to go through some of the background, but we're going to go through it quickly and we're going to get to some really juicy stuff. So this isn't going to be boring. FTC goes back to 1914 with Congress's passing of the Federal Trade Commission Act. Now, this was a response by Congress to the fact that back in the early 1900s, there were several monstrous companies that were price fixing, price gouging, cooperating with each other to keep prices high. And the consumers were getting pretty much screwed. The economy wasn't great. The country was just about to go into, World War I. And so Congress passed the FTC Act in response to a lot of consumer complaints about unfair business practices and monopolies. Standard Oil, Rockefeller's company, it was one of them. It was putting other, oil companies, gas companies out of business. It was breaking strikes illegally. It was abusing their employees. So many abuses of companies performed by companies like this that the federal government decided to take some action. And their goal originally was to provide fair competition in the marketplace. So you couldn't have a monopoly. And you'll notice that the emphasis here is in the marketplace. FTC's original role was to make sure that company A couldn't do illegal things to prevent company B from being a player in a particular space. Over time, the FTC's role has evolved dramatically. And the FTC today has expanded its jurisdiction to include consumer protection, not just industry protection and fair competition, but consumer protection across all marketing and advertising programs. And the main objective here is to protect consumers from being fooled. By false advertising, misleading advertising, over-exaggerated advertising, and to protect consumers against deceptive marketing practices. And we're going to talk about what some of those look like. So the current mission of FTC is twofold now: protect consumers while promoting fair competition in different markets. So the FTC enforces antitrust laws and prevents monopolies from, becoming unfair players in a market. But they also safeguard consumers from these deceptive and fraudulent practices. And the idea here is to create a marketplace in any category, on any type of platform. It used to be print, and it went to television, radio. Now it's on the internet, social media. They want to create a conducive marketplace so that business competition thrives and consumers have the maximum level of protection from getting screwed over. So the FTC has a role, what we call in the marketing industry, a watchdog. They're looking, they're monitoring. They're like the service dog for someone that may have seizures, right? The dog sits there and, they're friendly and hangs out. But if you're having a seizure, they're watching you. They jump right on and take advantage and help you out of it. The FTC is a watchdog. They're there. They're watching. You may not know they're watching. You may not see them. You may never hear from them, but they're watching. And they monitor business practices to ensure compliance with regulations, and not only their regulations, but the regulations of other agencies, financial agencies, insurance regulations, federal regulations, FDA health regulations. FTC looks at all of these regulatory agencies, and FTC is typically the one that has what we call the police power to jump in and take an action. And so they combat these deceptive and fraudulent product claims and schemes by working with other federal agencies and state agencies. They don't have the resources to do everything in the whole country. But what they will do is they'll call up the Attorney General's office or the Better Business Bureau's offices in a particular state, and they'll say, "Hey, you've got a company incorporated in your state that's, conducting illegal practices."
Right.
And the aim is to prevent harm, right? They're not really worried about if you're getting slightly overcharged for a product or something like that, but they want to prevent harm. So they hold businesses, and this is a very important point. We're going to spend an entire session on this really soon. The FTC holds businesses and their partners accountable and liable for actions that might harm a consumer.
So when you say partners, that also includes marketers. I don't work. I this came up the other day. Somebody said, "Well, I don't work for them. I'm not liable." And
Okay, so let me
he
clarify that once and for all. You're the marketer. You make a product or you sell a service, you have a store, an online store. And you intentionally, knowingly, or even accidentally make an illegal claim, right? Okay. But you have, let's say, an agency that's creating the creative materials and placing them for you and buying the media, monitoring it, adjusting it, doing all the A/B tests, and looking at all your stats. Everybody in the chain who handles the material that says or presents a false claim or a misleading claim has liability. Period. So if I'm going to advertise something and I hire an ad agency or a creative agency to do something, they are liable because they are required to do due diligence to make sure that what they're involved in is kosher. So, for example, I act as a strategic consultant to a number of companies on compliance in and out of the healthcare space. And I'm very, very, very cautious. Someone will come to me and say, "Can you look at my website? Is this okay? Because, I got rejected from running ads by Facebook or Google or whatever." And I'll look at it and I'll say, "Well, it says this," which you're not allowed to say. "Yeah, but my agency wrote it, or I hired somebody to write the content, or a third party created this. I didn't write this." We'll get into that in a minute right here. But yes, the marketer, the brand owner, distributor, agencies, influencers, reviewers, third parties are all liable. The degree of liability may vary, but they all have exposure and liability to FTC's regulations. Let's talk about the FTC's authority. They are empowered by Congress as an independent regulatory agency, and they enforce consumer protection and antitrust laws. And this is an important point. It's not that they just watch and they'll report it to somebody. They are the somebody. They are the police agency. They have policing authorities with full authority to investigate, prosecute, have hearings, penalize violators, issue regulations, impose penalties with the full force of law. You do not want to fight the FTC. Even the biggest players in the world don't win when they fight FTC. Now, that's good news and bad news. The good news is that FTC isn't really going to come after you unless they really, really, really think they have an airtight case. So the more compliant you can be, the safer you will likely be. But there's no such thing as 100% safe. So FTC investigates and prosecutes. They get complaints, or they themselves notice something they don't feel is appropriate. They start an investigation, or a competitor anonymously or consumers blatantly can complain about an unfair or a deceptive practice. So the FTC will jump in, they'll gather evidence, they'll review websites and marketing materials and ads and television and emails, and they'll review everything. And they'll analyze the data and they'll come to a decision. Do they think you are violating the regulations? And they take various levels of enforcement action against violators. Now, sometimes it's as simple as a letter. "Hey, we noticed you're saying this, not allowed to say it. Please change it. You've got 10 days." You change it. You send them proof that you change it. It's not a big deal. Everybody goes on with their lives. Sometimes their enforcement actions are very, very aggressive. Cease and desist. Shut down your business. And the FTC, unlike several other agencies, they don't like to settle easily. They will settle, but it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be inexpensive. Penalties, and FTC has final jurisdiction, by the way, to impose financial penalties, can range from tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars to billions of dollars.
Real quick question on that. So, like for Alex Steele, he's in Canada, but he sells in the US. Let's use that as an example, or whoever. Their business is registered in another country, but they sell in the US.
Right.
Does the FTC work globally with other countries to, how does that work?
The answer is yes, most countries. In fact, most countries have their own truth in advertising regulators, like is the Advertising Standards Board in the UK. Canada has one. There are truth in advertising regulators in most countries. And they're modeled after what the FTC does. Now, some of the rules are different. Obviously, cultures are different. Look at the issue of privacy, for example, in Europe with GDPR versus privacy of consumer data in the US. Same company, different approaches to using data, collecting data, first party, third party. But the FTC absolutely works with and cooperates with international agencies. No question about it. I've seen dozens of examples of this.
So if they were to find, let's say they come to find me or whatever, I'm in
Poor
Russia.
Alex, we keep picking on Alex.
I'm in Russia. They come to find me or whatever. I get a letter that says, "Hey, you need to take this down." I basically say, "Eh, I'm just gonna ignore it. I don't really care." They can take a hike. At that point, is that something where they would go to Shopify or something and say, "Hey, this site needs to come down"? Where the
So
F be.
you're asking a very, very good but very sophisticated level of question, Jay. So there are what we call touch points in the path. So I manufacture a product. Where am I manufacturing it? In the US? Is it being manufactured in China and shipped in across the border into the US? So those are different touch points. Then where am I marketing it? Am I marketing it only in Florida? Am I marketing it only in the US on the internet? Am I excluding various states or countries from being able to buy my product when you go to checkout? Then there's the issue of where does the e-commerce take place? Where does the purchase take place? And there are a lot of interpretations, and there are ongoing challenges in the court system that the purchase takes place where the consumer is, where I typed in my credit card. The purchase takes place in the store that I walked into, even though all the goods in the store come from China. I'm buying it, on Main Street. Then there's others who contend that the purchase takes place where the servers are based and the transaction is processed. Then there are others who contend that the transaction takes place where the processor, the gateway, is located. So there's a lot of different possibilities here. There's no one definitive answer. And frankly, the FTC, they flavor it in their favor, case by case.
Right. So just because you live in Lithuania or something and you get a shutdown or a fine, right, you're not going to be able to get away from it.
Well, it depends. There are some countries where it's easier to hide than others, right? There have been black hat actors in advertising and marketing for the last 200 years,
Yeah, that's true.
right? The classic definition of snake oil comes from the expansion into the west of the United States when we were, destroying Native American populations. And, some guy would set up his wagon train and sell bottles of cures everything, right? There's black hat actors in every industry, in every country, all across the world. And sometimes you can't do anything about it. That doesn't mean we should try to emulate them and get away with it. It's not my style. I advise my clients against it. Now, I'm all in favor of pushing the envelope, by the way. I am all in favor. I'm a devout capitalist. I believe in making money. I also believe in not intentionally hurting others. So without screwing over consumers in a way that they would get hurt financially or otherwise, I don't mind if my clients push the envelope. I mind if they cross the line significantly because they know better. It's intentional. And there's a, you don't get any excuses. There's no get out of jail free card by saying, "Oh, I didn't know." It's your responsibility to know as a marketer. You should do. So let's jump into some specifics that FTC is involved in. And every one of these things affects everybody who is looking and watching this presentation, who's advertising, marketing, buying ads, handling creative, placing ads. Every one of those parties is involved, has liability and exposure. So pay attention to the specific big topics that will get you in trouble with FTC. One is false claims. So the FTC tries to ensure that ads avoid false statements about product features, benefits, performance, results. So you really are not allowed to make untrue or unsubstantiated statements about what a product is going to do for you. For example, if you're a skincare product and you say that just putting the product on your face, wrinkles are gone within minutes, there's no scientific proof that it happens.
What about just saying eliminate wrinkles?
Well, it depends that, particularly, I don't want to get too deep in the specifics of this, but wrinkles are a surface effect, right? They're a natural sign of aging and dry skin and overexposure to the sun and all sorts of other things. And topical products, like a skincare product, topical products are only allowed to impact beauty and appearance and also keep the skin, the external part of your body, clean. They're not allowed to fix a health problem. So if wrinkles are caused by some sort of collagen deficiency, then skincare product cannot say eliminates wrinkles. It's
Well,
illegal.
it's safer to just say, like in that example, nothing. Obviously, we all know the only way to eliminate wrinkles is to do a facelift. There's no product on the market that completely eliminates wrinkles because whoever created it would be the richest person in the world, right?
Sure. But what you can
So,
say,
decrease.
correct. You can say decreases the appearance of wrinkles and fine lines. So you got to be careful about the words you're using in your claim. And we can expand this FTC compliance series, Jay, if you want afterwards to go into some more specific. We can go into financial compliance, go into healthcare compliance. We can expand this because they're all similar but different, right?
Right.
Weight loss. I know that you've had and I've had multiple clients in the weight loss industry. It's a multi-gazillion dollar business, right? So you cannot promise weight loss results if you don't have scientific data to back it up. You just can't say you're going to lose 20 pounds in a week because there's no science that says that. And you also can't even say what the US government standard is about you can lose, what, 1 or 2 pounds every so often without including the fact that you need to include exercise.
I
Right?
know a lot, and a lot of people are probably saying, well, everybody says that. Yeah, they do. They're all not compliant. I mean, I know there's, I could probably go to some of the biggest companies right now and they're going to say, lose 30 pounds in 30 days. Like it's.
Oh yeah, absolutely. In fact, some of the biggest names in the world in the weight loss industry have had FTC claims and violations and paid a fortune in fines. We can get into some examples.
One that comes to mind, I don't even know if they're still around, but like Hydroxycut.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Even Weight Watchers had FTC problems for a lot of different reasons. But there's something that's a little bit sad.
Heidi Montag lost 22 pounds with hydroxycut.
Very often, the penalties are insignificant to how much money the company has made.
Right.
So, for example, let's just talk about a very popular social media platform whose name I won't mention. That you and I may be doing a live on right now, who had to pay a $5 billion fine to the FTC for violations of privacy regulations. What do you think they did? They wrote the check and laughed. $5 billion drop in the bucket. So if the penalty doesn't impose real pain, or is really, really, really strong enough to act as a deterrent, lot of companies don't care. They're happy to pay the fine and keep going, which is why the FDA and the FTC also have authority to shut your business down. So, financial penalties aren't working first time, second time, third time. They can get more aggressive. So let's talk about omission. So the first one was false claims, right? Where you're saying something proactively that's not true. The other side of the coin is omission of material information. If you, as a marketer or an advertiser, fail to disclose certain details that might be important to affect a consumer's purchasing decision, then you're in violation. So, for example, if a product has certain side effects or limitations, or you're not allowed to, you shouldn't take it if you're pregnant or nursing or plan to get pregnant. You got to keep it out of the hands of kids. You shouldn't eat this if you have a peanut allergy. There's all sorts of warnings. Don't stick your hand in the electric socket, right? You see the yellow and the orange triangle, the warning sign on lots of products, not even healthcare products, contain small parts. Keep out of the reach of kids so they don't swallow it. So, neglecting to mention all of the potential side effects, harms, warnings, bad things that could happen is a violation. Withholding information about hidden fees or conditions attached to subscription services. Now, subscriptions is a big controversy, particularly, if I get involved with clients. I have a large belief in subscriptions if they're done the right way. 75 to 80% of everyone who signs up for a subscription winds up leaving. All they did was take advantage of a discount for a period of time. But if a subscription that you're asked to sign up for has any kind of hidden fees or conditions attached to it, then it becomes illegal. So you've got to disclose. This is all about disclosing. And there's lots of disclosure aspects in FTC compliance. One of them is if you're going to get charged something or you're going to be forced to do something and they haven't told you in advance so you can make an informed decision and provide proactive consent that you know what you're doing, then that's a violation. Bait and switch. If you are luring customers using a very attractive offer with the intention of switching them to a more expensive, a more profitable, a higher margin, or an inferior product, if you're doing that as an upsell or a cross-sell legitimately, or you have a lead magnet and it goes up the value chain to a more expensive product, that's fine. But if you're luring customers by presenting intentionally an attractive offer that doesn't really exist, then you have a problem. So if you
Right.
advertise a product at a high discounted price, people say, "Oh my God, that's great. I got to jump in." And then you get to the website and it's out of stock. But you may also like, it's a slightly higher priced product. But you knew the product was out of stock when you marketed it. That's illegal. If you offer a free trial for a service or a subscription for a product, but you employ hard to cancel processes, or you require customers to pay those hidden fees or sign up for long-term contracts without upfront disclosure and affirmative consent by the buyer, the consumer, then you're doing something illegal. So there has to be a way to get out. There has to be a way to end my subscription, terminate my plan, cancel my contract, and it's got to be fair and reasonable. And you have to tell me what that is up front. Cancel anytime. 30-day money back guarantee. There's got to be a way that you tell me what my out is. Because in general law, a contract of any kind that doesn't have a termination provision or a periodicity to how long the contract is enforced for is not enforceable. There has to be a way out. Falsely implying endorsements. If you're either misleading or hoping that consumers may get the implication that your product or your company has been endorsed by or affiliated with individuals and organizations. You've seen this on how many websites, Justin, using logo as seen in Forbes and the New York Times, pay for play, right? And just because you had a press release picked up in the New York Times one time doesn't mean you were featured in the New York Times or that the New York Times promotes you. So using their logo on your website is not quite kosher because the average consumer, and this is called the reasonable person standard. If the average reasonable person would look at something and say, oh, yeah. They've got the Forbes logo on their website. Forbes is reputable, right? So therefore the company is associated somehow or endorsed by, or even if it implies it without you saying it, it's not legal. So if you're going to use logos or symbols of other institutions, media on your website, you either have to have legitimate express permission in writing from that media, or you have to be careful about what you say. So, if you just show the logos without saying anything, you're trying to imply that there's a stronger relationship and endorsement level relationship than there might really be. But if you say, as advertised in, as advertised on, as promoted on. And if you're really promoting, and even if it's an affiliate relationship, you are promoting, that's a truthful statement. So the way you craft your words, sometimes it's not what you're saying, but how you're saying it.
My wife tells me that all the time.
Right? My wife too.
It's not what you said, it's how you said it.
My wife too. So your wife has to stop talking to my wife.
Yeah.
Here's another big one. Doctor recommended. Let's say you hire a doctor, you pay a doctor, or let's say one of your partners is a real MD, and they helped you figure out the product, right? And they're on your board, a real doctor, genuinely certified, went to medical school, got the degree, practicing doctor. You cannot legally say doctor recommended because the regulations say that to say doctor recommended or recommended by doctors requires a statistically significant percentage of practicing doctors in that field to affirmatively in writing confirm that they recommend it to their patients and use it with their patients. So 9 out of 10 dentists, recommend XYZ toothpaste to their patients. That's in writing because the big companies, the CPG companies that make those brands, have actually gone out to all the dentists in the country and said, hey, what do you think? Is this okay with you? Do you use it? They've had consensus meetings. Sales reps call on them, distribute samples. Sometimes you go into the dentist and you leave, they give you a little bag. It's got a toothbrush in it, a little tube of toothpaste, right? So you just because you have a doctor, you can put that doctor on your website. You can say, Dr. Bob Jones says, if he says it, because it's true. But you cannot say doctor recommended. Because it implies to the reasonable average consumer that doctors, plural, large number of them, agree this is a good product. Also, this is one of my favorites. Testimonials from fictitious individuals, right? Look at what's going on with AI today. And even before AI, Susie J from Chicago gives a testimonial. Who's Susie J? Does she really exist? Did you just make it up? So testimonials from fictitious individuals or celebrities to promote a product, not kosher. And so if you're going to have a review or a testimonial from a consumer, you are supposed to disclose that they are a verified user or a verified purchaser, like Amazon does. And you are supposed to have on file the review or testimonial that that consumer sent to you, either wrote it online, submitted it, sent you an email, whatever it is, you're supposed to keep a copy of it. So if you're ever challenged, you can say, yeah, Susie is a real consumer, bought our product and wrote this.
But it also has to be compliant. So I know this came up with the client, Marty, that you and I worked on in the past, is you can't display we ran into this specifically with a brand, but you can't have the review say, hey, I took this and it helped cure my cancer.
Cured my cancer, right? Okay, so great question. The law says that I'm going to pick on Susie. Susie is a real purchaser of my product. She uses it, all legitimate. She's a real person, really bought the product, really uses it, and she loves it. She's been using it for 6 months or 9 months, whatever. And Susie suffers from arthritis. And guess what? Her arthritis is massively better, reduced, or gone. And Susie writes a testimonial that says, oh my God, I have used the Marty supplement or the Marty cream for the last 6 months, and my arthritis pain is completely gone. Susie's allowed to say that because we have First Amendment free speech protections. She can say that to her friends. She can say that on her own blog or website. She's allowed to say that. She can send us a testimonial. The minute I put that testimonial or review on my website, both FDA and FTC say I'm saying it because I'm taking something and I'm showing it to prospective buyers of my product in the hope that they're going to say, oh, wow, it helped her arthritis. Maybe it will help mine. So it's making an implied treatment claim, which is not allowed. So a lot of companies put reviews on their website, testimonials, social proof, we call it. Great. But here's a kicker. The majority of these automated social proof review systems, plugins, whatever, don't let you edit a review. So you gotta go back to the consumer and say, hey, listen, could you rewrite this and take out the word arthritis? Just say, I love it, it makes me feel good. But you are allowed to edit a review or a testimonial you have received. You are allowed to edit it for length. It's too long to put it on the website. Say Susie wrote you a six-page letter. You don't have to put a six-page letter on your website. You can edit it for length, brevity. You can edit it for format. Let's say Susie spelled 17 words wrong and you put it on your website, it looks like you're an idiot. You're allowed to fix that. And as long as you don't change the underlying meaning, you can edit the words. Susie can say, I've been taking the Marty supplement for 6 months and I feel fantastic. Love this product. That's fine. So we're going to spend this, pretty much part of a session on testimonials and reviews. But the bottom line is, If a review or a testimonial is non-compliant with either FDA or FTC regulations, you cannot legally use it in your marketing and advertising. Misleading visuals. This is a good one. You've all seen before and after. Here's my face with all these, let's go back to the wrinkles. Here's my face with all these wrinkles, and I look like I grew up in a sun-baked desert. That's the before picture. And here's the after picture where I look 82 years younger, right? And my face is glowing and I have no wrinkles, right?
Yep.
The before and after stuff, in some cases, before and after is allowed. In some cases, it is not. But it can't be manipulated. It can't be phony. It can't be exaggerated. The before picture is nice and dark and the guy hasn't shaved in 2 days and the after picture is bright and enhanced. Even if you haven't photoshopped the face, even if you just make it look better intentionally to give a consumer a representation that the after is better than the before, not good.
Right.
You can't use artificial enhancements, for example, in food advertisements. And you all see this every single day. Here's a pick one, McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King, doesn't matter, In-N-Out Burger. Here's a picture of our hamburger on TV in an ad, right? And it's beautiful. It's plump and juicy. And the tomatoes are flawless. And the, you know, the lettuce is crisp and green. And the bun is not crunched. And when you go there and you buy one, it's a hockey puck of a hamburger, and you know, the bun is torn apart, looks like a dog ate it. You can't do that. Now, that's why, if you'll notice, and if any of you have kids or any of you eat cereals, you'll notice on most packages of cereals they have a picture of the cornflake on the front, and it'll say not actual size. Because they have to disclaim that what you're seeing isn't what you're getting. You can't manipulate. You can't elaborate with the intention of convincing a consumer that you are something or will do something that you either aren't or you don't or can't do. Unrealistic product demonstrations. Okay. FTC prohibits demonstrating or depicting product performance that is unrealistic or exaggerated. Spill some stuff on your kitchen counter. Oh my God, 2 square inches of this paper towel and 7 gallons of liquid is soaked up in a second. It's not a realistic demonstration. And so realistic demonstrations are required if you're going to demonstrate a product. Showing a cleaning product that can just in one swipe remove 27 years of rust and grime. It's not realistic. It doesn't work that way. Unless it really does and you can prove it, you can't exaggerate and show an unrealistic product demonstration. Again, digitally altered before and after images, absolutely out of the question. Absolutely illegal. Now everybody does it. Why? Go back to what I said earlier. Everybody who does something illegal doesn't always get caught every time they do it. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Is the risk severe enough to deter you? Or is the reward, I'm going to make $1 million by presenting, you know, violations of FTC ads? And when the FTC comes after me, I'm happy to pay the $100,000 fine.
Right.
Business decision, guys. This is a very big one. We're going to spend some serious time on this. Failure to disclose beneficial, sometimes mostly money, relationships between marketers and influencers.
This includes giving them product for free, correct?
Absolutely. So let me be very, very clear. If you fail to disclose that there is a beneficial relationship, doesn't have to be money, or compensation between the marketer and an influencer you are using, you are not allowed to fail to disclose that. And it's not just disclose it. You can't bury it in your privacy policy or terms and conditions. You can't put it in a little mouse type at the bottom of your web page. You have to disclose it prominently, right up front. If you pay an influencer to promote a product, both parties must disclose the influencer is being paid. The marketer who uses what the influencer produces, UGC, has to say, these were compensated, or we provided free product, because it doesn't have to be cash. It could be any form of compensatory benefit. Free product, publicity. I'll feature you on my website. Whatever it is, if you are paying in any way an influencer, you and the influencer must disclose that what the influencer is saying, doing, reviewing, unboxing, promoting was paid for. Now, a lot of clever ways to do this. The influencer doesn't have to say right up front, I've been paid by the Acme Bottle Company to say that this is a great bottle. It doesn't have to do that. It could be as simple as the influencer picking up a bottle and saying, my friends at the Acme Bottle Company sent me this bottle for a review. You've just disclosed that they sent you the bottle. Doesn't sound wrong. How are you supposed to review something if you haven't gotten one? Providing free products or any other kind of incentive in exchange for a positive review without both parties disclosing that relationship is illegal. So, for example, leave us a review and we'll give you a free product. Not legal. That doesn't mean if somebody leaves you a review, a week later you can't send them something and say, by the way, thanks. But you can't tease or promote that they're going to get compensation before they write the review, because that's compensating them. Here's a related but slightly different. You can't fail to disclose a relationship between a marketer and a review site. Now, you all know if you type in, tennis rackets into Google, the first five or six listings you're going to see and ads you're going to see are probably review sites. We've checked out the best tennis rackets of 2024, and there's one clear winner. You read the review site, they provide a link to where you can get their number one, number two, number three recommended tennis racket. And guess what? That link passes through an affiliate tracking code, and the reviewer or the review site earns a commission. That has to be disclosed. And you'll see that some, not all, review sites have a sentence that says, oh, and by the way, the article may contain links for your convenience to buy a product, and we may earn some money. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. But for the FTC, you have to say it. You can't bury it, you can't hide it, you can't hope the consumer doesn't see it. It's got to be prominent and upfront. And we're going to get into more details because, for example, if it's a UGC and it's 5 minute long video, you have to disclose it more than once. We're going to get into that when we talk about compensation. Health claims is one of the biggest areas, and everybody thinks that the FDA is in charge of all health claims. Well, yes and no. The FDA works hand in glove with the FTC because the FDA doesn't have quite the level of aggressive enforcement or police powers that FTC has. So often the FDA will notify FTC of a serious violation and let the FTC go after them. So false or unsubstantiated claims about a product. If you claim that a dietary supplement can treat, cure, or prevent any disease or any symptoms that could likely be caused by a disease, you're in violation. Advertising a product as natural or organic, if it isn't, is illegal. If it has synthetic ingredients in it, you can't say it's natural. Promoting, we talked about this a moment ago, that a weight loss product can result in an unrealistic amount of weight loss in an unrealistic period of time. False claims. Unsubstantiated claims. Let's say you want to make a claim and it's actually true. The Harvard Medical School and you know the most prestigious institutions in the world have tested your health product and agree. You still need adequate peer-reviewed scientific evidence. It can't be six chiropractors in your local town said this is a great product, right? And it does A, B, and C. So if you're going to claim a dietary supplement can boost immunity or improve cognitive function, you need to have clinical trials that were conducted that were positive and peer-reviewed and available to the public, research studies that demonstrate what you are claiming is factual. And you also need to present what the FTC and the FDA require called fair balance. If there are 10 studies on a product, and six of them are positive, and two of them are neutral, and two of them are negative, say the product didn't work, you need to disclose that as well. You need to inform the consumer about the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. The phrase clinically proven is a little too definitive for FDA and FTC. You can say clinically demonstrated, clinically shown, but proven to the regulatory agencies means without a shadow of a doubt. Then the consumer says, it's proven. Risks, warnings. If you fail to disclose a health risk on a health product, if you fail to disclose a potential adverse result or a safety concern of marketing any product, you're marketing a Lego type kit, right? For kids. Small pieces, they could swallow it. So you got to say for ages 5 and above, keep out of reach of children, swallowing risk. You get your dry cleaning back and the plastic bag over it says may cause suffocation, right? There's all these risks that get disclosed, warnings that get disclosed. We mostly think about this in terms of health risks, but it applies to any kind of product. If there is a risk to somebody's health, safety, your kid's health or safety, your pet's health or safety, your baby or unborn baby's health or safety, you have to disclose it. And again, it can't be in tiny mouse type. It can't be on a the you know little piece of paper that comes inside the sealed box. Fraudulent marketing schemes. Marketers are not allowed to conduct deceptive marketing or to try to trick consumers. You can't say, buy this and you're automatically entered to win $1 million. Unless two things. unless number one, you actually have the $1 million put away in escrow and you actually award it. And number two, you can't deceptively collect someone's personal information by offering them the opportunity to win a prize. Because to win a prize, all I have to do is give you my name, maybe my email address, so you can get in touch with me. I don't have to tell you my date of birth. I don't have to give you my social security number. I don't have to put up a credit card, no purchase necessary. You've all seen that. So trying to get personal information through a deceptive practice is really, really a serious violation. That will get you in trouble. Again, misleading claims about effectiveness or benefits. And bait and switch tactics, we talked about one before. On sale, 80% off. Go to the website, out of stock. But you may also like this similar product. Deceptive pricing. I raise my price by $20, my normal price by $20 a unit, and I run a special $20 off sale. That's a deceptive pricing strategy.
I've also seen people get in trouble for always being on sale.
Yeah. So,
Actually, we had a client get in trouble for that.
and you know my personal feeling on that.
Yeah, I
I
know.
think that if you are a marketer and you are always on sale and you're always relying on discounts, 20% off this weekend, 30% off site wide, 10% off if you do this, 40% off on that. If you are constantly discounting, 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 it's suicide.
You have to have, don't quote me on this, but if somebody has a question, I could put you in touch with the guy that got the letter. But you have to have so many days and be able to prove where you're on sale versus not on sale. So you like just always can't be on sale. We actually got turned in and got letters for that and had to fix it.
Yeah, so look at what some of the big players like, I guess, Walmart, Costco do, right? They say everyday low prices. They don't say on sale every day, because sale implies you're paying less than you usually would. Low price, that's fine. But you can't always be on sale. You can't inflate your original prices to then put it on sale. You can't put a flag on a product image on a PDP that says sale, special offer, if it isn't. So manipulating prices during a sales event or creating artificial scarcity. Now, everybody knows that urgency and scarcity does work, right? Only six left. Hurry. Well, if you know you've got 600 of them on your shelf, saying only six left is illegal because you're lying. If you say sale ends at midnight tonight, but you let the sale run another week or two without disclosing, you're lying. It's illegal. So artificial scarcity, artificial urgency, don't do it. It's not worth it. If the product is good, your marketing is good, and it solves a consumer's problem, fulfills a need or a benefit or a desire, you have a great shot at selling it if you do it right. You don't need to lie and manipulate. If you do to get competitive advantage, you're in the wrong game. Hidden, hard to find obligations. You know, you see a TV commercial for the 2024 Honda Civic. Great commercial. It's zooming down the highway. It's taking these curves. It's amazing. It stops short before it hits the other car. And then at the last frame of the commercial, there's 82 lines of copy in type so small you can't read it. And it goes away in 3 seconds. That's no longer acceptable now. Still do it, but you can't do that in your marketing. So the fine print, you can't bury things on the policy page. to exploit consumers, you can't have hidden fees. If they find out afterwards, because hey, we said so in our policy, in our terms of conditions, you have to disclose these things up front. A business is not allowed to modify terms without notice to and or consent from consumers. So you can say in your terms and conditions, we reserve the right to change prices at any time without notice. But you have to make it prominent. And you'll see that lawyers who draft these notices put it in all caps, larger type, so you can put it on your privacy page or your terms of service page, and it stands out. You can't make canceling something, a subscription, an auto bill, you can't make that an onerous process. You have to give consumers a relatively easy way to end a contract or a subscription or an agreement. And you cannot require that consumers pre-agree to binding arbitration clauses that restrict the consumer's ability to take you to court. You can say, we require binding arbitration first, but binding arbitration cannot prevent a consumer from taking you to court or filing a complaint with FTC. Data protection. So FTC investigates and penalizes companies that don't take adequate steps to protect consumers' personal information from, and this is the important part, unauthorized access, misuse, or unconsented use. So if I'm a company and you're coming to my website and I'm capturing all this information about you, if I have told you that I am going to use that information to send you more personalized offers or notices, that's okay. I've disclosed what I'm using it for. If I didn't disclose that I'm also selling your data to Justin's company so he can market to you, that's illegal. If I store your data, especially if it's personally identifiable information, and even more especially if it has anything to do with healthcare, where a bad actor can easily access it, it's not secure, it's hackable, it's breachable. And even some of the biggest companies in the world that have the most sophisticated firewalls and data protection, they get hacked, right? Hackers are good. So you've got to do everything you can to protect sensitive personal data. You are not allowed to share data outside of your company. People in your company need to know. So if I'm the marketing arm and I'm selling you a product and I'm collecting your data and I'm giving it to my customer service team so that if you call, where's my order? My product arrived broken. They can look it up right away. They've got your data. That's okay. Can't share it outside the company unless you specifically give me permission to do so, which is why for my clients, I always set up what I call a preference center. It's like a user dashboard where the user can go in and say, I want these kinds of emails, I want them this frequently, and I do or do not consent to you using this type or that type of data. And you also have to disclose your use of various tracking devices, GDPR in Europe, first party and third party tracking cookies, accept all cookies, see my preferences. You've seen those pop up on websites all over the US. COPPA, the Child Online Privacy Protection Act. You can't market to kids without their permission of the parents. You can't collect information about kids without parents' permission. So Enforcement of data protection is part of what FTC's mandate is. This is when you're all going to be interested. We're going to do a full session on this one. Online tracking and behavioral advertising. The bottom line here is that you, the company, can collect and use various levels of browsing data, behavioral data, so that you can better serve the client and you can internally evaluate various metrics to improve your business. But if you're going to have any sharing of that data with a third party, you must have consumer consent upfront. You cannot track an individual's personal health or financial information, bank account numbers. That's why if you save your credit card for, you know, easier checkout next time, they don't save your CVV number. So without affirmative consent in advance, you cannot track personal health information, store it. You cannot track and store financial information. You must, on the other hand, FTC requires this, you must empower your consumers to be able to control their privacy preferences, to opt out of various levels of online tracking, to manage their privacy settings across websites and online platforms. Counterfeit products goes without saying. If you're selling fake Louis Vuitton handbags, you're in trouble, right? FTC has the authority to notify Amazon to take you down, to notify Facebook or Google to take you down off of Google Shopping because it's a counterfeit product. They can impose penalties. They work with law enforcement. They actually have marshals show up at your door, seize your counterfeit goods and prosecute you, and close your business. Here's something to remember. FTC, with the other federal agencies, all collaborate every single day with all the major e-commerce platforms and social media platforms to try to implement stricter and stricter verification processes for sellers and product listings. Have you not noticed over the last several years that it's harder to get Facebook ads approved, Google ads approved, let's say for healthcare products? This is the result, not of Google, they want your money. Not of Facebook, they want your advertising spend, but of the regulatory agencies putting such pressure on them for compliance. False and exaggerated reviews, we talked about this. So the FTC has the authority to send you a cease and desist order if they think the violation is, you know, moderate to, you know, middling. If it's a serious violation or a repeated violation after they've warned you, they can impose penalties. Because as I said, please, I want to say this a lot. FTC and other federal agencies have full-time staff monitoring the major advertising and social media platforms with bots, with eyeball reviews, with keyword alerts, with flags. They are watching. And this is what Justin brought up at the very beginning. Click fraud, bot traffic, fake impressions to convince consumers millions of people follow you and love you. Compliance with advertising standards, exaggerating. All the parties in the chain have liability. You cannot say, oh, well, such and such magazine decided to write an article about my product. Whether I pay them or not. And in the article, it makes illegal claims about my product, illegal statements, cures cancer. And I, as the marketer or the manufacturer, the seller, I see that. I'm required to call them up and say, hey, don't say that. You can't say that about my product. And if it gets caught, I have liability, even that you wrote it. And you have liability. And my ad agency who placed it has liability. Why? Because they created the ad. They went ahead and they wrote the words that were illegal. And I allowed them. So I'm liable, they're liable. And the destination, the platform that the ads were placed on, accepted it. They're liable too. Everybody has liability. You cannot get away with anymore saying, I didn't write it. They wrote it. They said it. And that applies to UGC, influencers, reviewers, third-party sites, anything that references or provides what we call a nexus, a connection to your product or sales page or PDP or wherever they can get the product, a link. It could be as simple as a link. Article, you didn't write it, has illegal claims in it, and there's a link to get the product. It's completely illegal. So disclosure is what happens here. And we're going to spend a session on this too. This is just a quickie. Transparency and online. Advertisers must disclose sponsored content or paid endorsements in their ads. They have to ensure that sponsored posts on social media platforms are labeled as sponsored, paid partnership, advertisement, or some similar clear disclosure to distinguish them from purely native or organic content. You cannot try to fool a consumer to believe it's an article written by somebody just like any other online piece of content. And the material connections we talked about before have to be disclosed. And we're going to talk about where, how long, and what needs to be said these disclosures look like in the next session. Truth in advertising seems kind of self-obvious. No false statements, no misleading statements, no guaranteed returns or investments on a financial product without adequate disclosure of risks. You could lose everything. Past performance is no indicator of future results. This is not typical results. You can't count on this, right? All those disclosures have to be there. Loans and credit cards. They've got to tell you what the interest rate is. They've got to tell you what the penalties are for late payment. All the little details of risk, cost, warnings have to be disclosed prominently. And you are also not allowed to specifically target vulnerable populations, like all these subprime, mortgage deals. That particularly target people who are in desperate financial conditions, not legal. FTC addresses consumer complaints. This is one of those double-edged swords because anybody can complain. Justin and I were in the same industry. He's a competitor. I want to hurt him, so I complain about his products. They're unsafe. They caused me a side effect. My kid swallowed one, whatever it is, I complain. And I can complain anonymously to all these agents. I complain anonymously to FDA, to FTC, to the NAD. Competitors do this all the time. So you need to be really careful because if you don't open yourself up for a complaint in the first place, the likelihood that you're going to get a legitimate complaint decreases. Consumer education is one of the most important things you can do. Tell your consumer, how does it work? Why does it work? What does it do? What does it not do? Don't expect this. Be careful about these most common side effects, which you may or may not experience. You still have to disclose. Let me give you a couple of quick examples before we end this session. Of what really happened. And I Show some household name companies so you can see it doesn't matter how big you are. Herbalife. They violated FTC regulations by claiming that if you signed up in their multi-level marketing program for their products, even if the product was legitimate, that you could make a massive income. They misrepresented how much profit you could make by selling Herbalife products and recruiting people to join your downline and their downline and the next downline. And the FTC finally settled with Herbalife to pay $200 million in consumer redress, refunds, fines, and to implement a lot of reforms and changes. Kure Encapsulations. This is a company that marketed weight loss supplements. And they marketed them as capable of burning fat and, here's the bad word, preventing weight gain. And they claimed their product came from an ingredient in a very rare Indian plant that caused significant weight loss and prevented further weight loss. And the FTC settled with them for $12.8 million in refunds to consumers and banned them from being in any business related to weight loss. We all know this one. A certain company mishandled user data and deceived consumers about privacy protections by allowing third-party apps to access user data without the user's advance affirmative consent, which violated its own policies, so they weren't truthful, and they misled users about the extent to which their data was being shared with advertisers and third parties. And the FTC required them to pay a $5 billion fine to implement new privacy controls and to establish an independent privacy committee that had authority to oversee and overrule their practices. Volkswagen. Volkswagen, some of you may remember, marketed their diesel vehicles as environmentally clean. But Volkswagen knew that they had equipped these vehicles with illegal software that cheated the emissions tests. Three major ad agencies, because you know that these big companies employ more than one ad agency. Three major ad agencies did not, I said failed with a question mark, failed, didn't, looked the other way, whatever it was, to conduct due diligence to ensure that the accuracy of the advertising claims and the creatives that they were making, and they were held liable with Volkswagen by the FTC.
Did they have to actually pay anything, or I wonder if Volkswagen paid it?
Volkswagen paid it for them, $14 billion in fines and settlements. Volkswagen experienced over the next year a 20% loss in sales because consumers couldn't trust them. And each of the three advertising agencies had such severely damaged reputations that they all lost other major clients who didn't want to be associated with an ad agency that cheated so blatantly.
Just kind of BS, because how are you supposed to know that they put a, unless you take the car and get it emission tested, but if it's cheating the test and says one thing, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, Volkswagen puts software in your car. So if you test the car, it gets 40 miles to the gallon and it isn't polluting. But in reality, you're only getting 20 miles to the gallon and it is polluting. But the emission test was cheated. That's pretty
What year
stupid.
was this?
What?
I didn't hear about this one. What year was this?
I will look it up for you right now.
I'm
I think
just curious.
2016.
Oh, it's fairly recent. Okay. Interesting.
Emissions scandal. Truth and Dare. Here. FTC charges Volkswagen deceived consumers, May 29th, 2016.
Interesting.
These things really happen, people. One more, Luminesh Direct, a cosmetic company. They showed TV commercials claiming that their airbrush makeup system provided flawless coverage, easy to use, no hidden fees. The problem was they used Photoshop before and after images. We talked about that. And they use testimonials, reviews from paid endorsers without disclosing that they paid for these nice words to be said. And the FTC finally settled with them for $92 million in consumer refunds and fines. Next time, we're going to talk about specific regulations. We're going to dive into the nitty-gritty of guidelines specifically for advertisers. We're going to take a little bit of a closer look at the Federal Trade Commission Act and how it is specifically addressing agencies, influencers, and reviewers. And we're going to look at the FTC's very, very specific, and every one of you is going to flip out, the endorsement guides for dot com disclosures. So, with that, I'm going to say that telling the truth isn't that complicated. Being compliant with FTC is not that complicated. I have personally overseen compliance for hundreds of clients, more than half of them enterprise level, and a lot of startups and a lot of small, medium scaling companies. Justin and I have worked together on dozens of programs to make sure that clients and advertisers were compliant, keep them safe. So, with that said, I'm going to say thank you very much. Stop sharing screen, and I hope that was helpful.
Yep, a lot of information. I don't have any specific questions. I will post, Marty, when you look at schedules for next week, but if the same time and day works, we can definitely do that. Be on the lookout. This will be uploaded into the vault too, and I'll also put it on, just so people can actually listen to it on the Spotify podcast as well. We'll upload it so that way if you're driving or something, you don't necessarily have to see the video, but you can listen to it as well. So I appreciate the time, Marty. And
We add one more disclosure. This is Marty disclosing. I am not a lawyer. I do not give legal advice. I'm actually one of the guys that teaches these lawyers because I've been involved with this for almost 40 years professionally for some of the biggest companies in the world and have been personally trained by FDA and FTC. So I'm very confident in what I'm saying and what I'm teaching, but do not assume I'm a lawyer. I don't play one on TV and I don't play one on Facebook.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week. Thank you, Marty.
Thank you, Justin.